welcome to Docupied, a podcast about anime, manga, light novels, and industry news. I'm your host, Brandon, otherwise known as DocPay. Let's jump right into the news roundup for this episode. The anime film trilogy Wave, about surfing, it seems like, will be premiering in October. The new Love Live anime confirmed the title for this season will be Love Live Superstar. So if you've been following along with this new group, or main group, it looks like a lot is still be to decided, but the title of the show will be Superstar. And I'm definitely looking forward to whatever comes of this season. Moving on, Yen Press announced they licensed the 86th manga, which is an adaptation of the light novel, and its first volume will be due out in December. Speaking of licenses, G-Kids has licensed Ghibli's and Gorō Miyazaki's upcoming Earwig and the Witch film. This looks to be Ghibli's first, like, full CG film. So it's not just produced digitally, it is a full CG film. So this will be something to keep an eye on, and I'm glad it's already been licensed, which makes sense because G-Kids handles currently all of the Ghibli licenses in the US at least. So looking forward to checking that out. I'll never pass up an opportunity to see something, Ghibli at least. And to wrap up the news, there's actually been quite a bit of, we'll just say shenanigans, I guess, going on with some light novels and manga on Amazon. So you may have already heard, and this has been ongoing for some publishers since like May or so, but Amazon Kindle has been delisting a slew of light novels and a handful of manga as well, but they seem centered around J Novel Club, and now it looks like Yen Press and even Dark Horse are all being impacted now. There's a lot of theories flying around right now as to why this is happening, but officially there's been no real reasoning or response from Amazon. J Novel Club has certainly tried, based on some of their tweets, articles that have been coming out about this, you know, the forums, posts. And as of right now, the most they're getting is this content is against some generic policy, but they don't explain why or specifically what about it. It seems like J Novel's founder, Sam, his theory is in general that we're getting some AI-generated removals, I guess we'll say, rather than having an actual human looking at these titles, reviewing them, or rather than this being the result of human error or something like that. His theory is that over the last number of months since the current ongoing global pandemic, which is, he said, when it began in May, things were being delisted, that it's likely they upped their automated review or content review system. And so a number of series are getting flagged and pulled. Some common theories I'm seeing thrown around are that most of the volumes being pulled have some form of fan service-y color insert at the start of the volume, or their covers are quite fan service-y. And this can lead to entire series being delisted or singular volumes being removed. It seems pretty haphazard, but some fairly big titles have actually been pulled, like No Game No Life for Yen Press, for example, or Grimgar for J Novel Club. The Oriimo manga, or the Ero Manga Sensei manga from Dark Horse, and then a slew of other J Novel Club light novels. So this whole situation is just fucking weird, personally. I'm not sure what Amazon's endgame here is, why they're trying to, well, maybe they're not trying, if this is indeed some kind of AI-based content review system that is just flagging and removing a bunch of stuff, and then they're not getting a human response in return for why this is happening. So it's hard to say what the actual reasoning, if any, there is, but it doesn't make any sense for Amazon to be removing this content from its Kindle store. None of these series are adult in nature. And even if there were, I don't know why they'd be removing it because it's adult. Like, Amazon sells adult products. So there's some weird line here being drawn. A lot of people are making parallels or saying there's a lot of parallel to what's been going on with Steam for visual novels for the last long, long while. And they're saying now Amazon is coming for our light novels, and I'm not sure it's quite the same. With Steam, it seems like some weird runaway policy that humans were actually enforcing intentionally for whatever stupid reason they have for doing so. However, in Amazon's case, it's quite random and sporadic what's actually being hit and why. So there's not a whole ton of information aside from that it is happening, and there have been a number of series that have been impacted by this. All I can say is my recommendation for specifically anything J-Novel Club, just become a member and buy the premium ebooks. That's primarily if you do read enough J-Novel Club series in a year. So specifically, I did the math on this when I signed up myself, and for J-Novel Club's membership, you get 12 ebook credits to buy premium ebooks for the year, so one per month. Those credits cost $6 as a subscriber, or if you're a member, I mean, so that equates to $72, or 12 volumes, obviously. The membership for the year, which is what I ended up going with, is $120. That leaves $48 to cover, which is 8 additional volumes. So, in theory, if you take the yearly membership at $120, you'll get 12 books. So technically, you need only read 8 volumes via the prepub over the course of the year in order to zero out the remainder of the membership cost compared to, say, buying those volumes on another platform. And then, on top of that, for every volume or ebook credit you do buy, which is $6 a piece, I was previously buying the volumes on Google, but I'm pretty sure it's the same cost all around, which is $7. So you save an additional dollar, you shave an additional dollar off of that $48 gap for each volume you buy. Plus, if you're like me, you value the additional bonus content or bonus stories enough that even if you don't necessarily save a couple dollars and you end up spending a few more dollars per year this method, it's worth it. I can quite honestly say I have already moved into the saving territory for the year. I did that a little while ago, actually. Based on the number of volumes I've read and purchased, I have already saved a bunch of money by going directly through them. Anyway, I know all of this sounds like one big ad for them, but I am really just a fan, pleased with the ability to read a bunch of light novels that I enjoy, and do so at a more affordable rate. Now, otherwise, there's plenty of other platforms out there for buying light novels that exist and that aren't going to start removing them anytime soon. A common one you'll see thrown around is Bookwalker. I personally am not a big fan of Bookwalker, but that's because they have very stringent DRM on all their stuff, and I'm not a fan of their app for reading or their website in general. Like, it is, in all the bad ways, a very Japanese company and website, which includes some positive in that they're not going to remove any of this content whatsoever. So this is never going to be a concern for them. But all of your stuff is locked onto Bookwalker, and you must use, you know, their app, their service. And I'm really not a fan of their app or their service. It feels a decade or more older, and it's tedious. So that's me. I know plenty of people who love it and use it, but I'd prefer not to. I buy ebooks that are non-J-Novel Club now through Google Play Books, personally. I prefer their app and reader. Payment is simple and easy. I can pre-order, and it auto-downloads. And I can also upload files from J-Novel Club that I purchase to there and continue using the same reader for everything. Generally speaking, it depends on the publisher, but you can also download I'm not sure necessarily if they're DRM-free, but I think they are when they're allowed. DRM-free volumes of things you've purchased on the platform. So again, it varies by publisher, but some publishers do allow that. And then you have your other platforms like Kobo. Like I said, this is primarily impacting the digital version, so the ebook versions. I'm not sure that they've done anything to take down the physical copies of these series, if they have them, but this is still pretty serious, and hopefully it doesn't deal a significant blow to these publishers. And hopefully we'll see this resolved sooner rather than later, that these publishers can get an actual response out of Amazon, which is seeming to be incredibly unlikely, but I do very much hope that they can get back up on what is obviously, at this point, the world's largest storefront and undoubtedly a significant revenue source for these ebooks. So that is going to wrap up the news roundup for this episode. I've been quite focused on a bunch of light novels recently, and you may have noticed that a lot of my recent episodes definitely make sure to cover some light novel or another. And that's because I've been doing a ton of reading of light novels. So obviously I want to talk about them as I read them. But I figured, hey, the spring season is over, and there were two anime adaptations for light novels that I very much enjoy. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. I have talked about on this podcast before both of these light novel series as recommendations. So let's talk about the anime versions and what I thought of them. Here is your general spoiler warning. I'm not going to spoil specific plot points or character developments, but I will be talking about these anime seasons and alluding to a lot of things. So if you haven't watched them or read the novels and you don't want to know absolutely anything at all about the series, go watch them and come back. So, the shows I'm going to talk about are, and you obviously already know this, but Ascendance of a Bookworm and My Next Life as a Villainess, All Routes Lead to Doom. So, like I said, I've talked about both of these light novels and given them as recommendations before, and during those episodes, I briefly touched on the anime seasons that were either currently airing. No, I think in both cases they were currently airing season 2 for Ascendance of a Bookworm and obviously the first season for Bakarina. So I touched on them briefly, but they hadn't concluded, and so they're done now, and or at least these seasons are finished, and so I wanted to talk about them, maybe in a little more detail. So let's start with Ascendance of a Bookworm, I guess. The original light novel series is written by Miya Kazuki. The show is animated by Ajiado Animation Works, and it has 26 episodes plus 2 OVA episodes. They recently announced season 3, so we will be getting the continuation. And just like I kind of predicted and thought they would, the anime covered up to part 2, volume 2. Or just straight up volume 5, if you want to number them that way. Part 2 of the story, and I guess I'll back up for those of you who aren't familiar with the way that the light novel breaks down its volumes. They go by part, and these parts include a number of volumes. So part 1 is all about Mine as the daughter of a soldier, and that covers the first 3 volumes. Part 2 is after she joins the temple, and that covers 4 volumes. So the anime covered halfway through part 2, the first 2 volumes of it. I myself have read all the way to the end of part 2, and actually I'm about to sit down, like, tomorrow to read the first volume of part 3. So I won't spoil what part 3 means, what the change that happens that turns it into a new part, but suffice it to say that each part is a significant arc of Mine's story in some form. So with that out of the way, the anime series covered a lot of the setup and kind of early arcs for mine. I'd suspect that season 3 will probably cover the remainder of part 2, and I don't know how deep or if at all they'd go into part 3, but considering they spent 26 episodes on 5 volumes, there's a fairly good chance that if they get one core or one season, they'll likely just finish up part 2. So anyway, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here. I'm not actually talking about the anime at all. Let's talk about the anime. And again, I talked about it briefly in the previous episode of this podcast that you can go back to and listen if you are curious about my thoughts specifically about the light novel. And I talk a little bit about how I view the anime or viewed it at the time. And a lot of that's going to carry over here because I still really enjoyed the anime adaptation, and it suffers from a lot of the same things that all light novel adaptations do, which is condensing and cutting material from the original series. And there's really nothing that can be done about that, and so it's not really going to be a unique, not complaint, but discussion point here. And you'll probably recognize some themes to what I talk about between these two shows, especially because I am, you know, as familiar as I am with the original source material, and so I have this base of knowledge going into these seasons that a standard anime viewer won't have, and so they might not notice the same things about the series. So, keeping that in mind, my perspective on these two is as someone who has read the original sources. Anyway, Ascendance of a Bookworm, I think from start to finish, was actually a really good show. We definitely lose out on a fair amount of world building and background and thoughts that come from like mine and some of the other characters, especially the alternative perspectives where certain chapters follow certain characters in the novels. There's a lot of insight that we don't get, but I think the anime does a really good job of, generally speaking, conveying the essence of a scene or character development that is in line with the actual novels. So while you are losing some specific detail, you're getting the bigger picture stuff. They definitely understood the characters, and it was quite clear that the people working on the show really do like or did like this series, because there was quite a bit of care put into making the anime itself as interesting as it could be. As much as I'd love them to adjust the pacing or include certain scenes, that's just, you know, not reasonable within the time frame that an anime is working under, or the constraints that anime works under. I think what the anime did most strongly, maybe, is its depiction, portrayal, and development of its characters. Rather than focusing on necessarily some of the world-building stuff, or focusing on some of the intrigue that was going on, it's all there, of course. It's the same story. Nothing was, like, altered. But within the anime, at least, it seems a lot more clear that the characters and their journey is what they wanted to tell and focus on. So your main duo of Mine and Lutz, or Lutz, along with Mine's family and the people she kind of picks up along the way, their development, their growth, the changes within them are what really drove this series. Nothing could be more evident from the way they decided to wrap up season 2. Not really a spoiler, but minor spoiler warning about the ending of season 2, but simply that at the end of the season, we wrap up with Mine with her family, having grown to the point where, as a character at the beginning, the only thing she ever gave a single shit about was books. The only thing on her mind was books, the only thing she would bother to put effort in and do anything for were books. But now, at the end of this season, she has this realization that she loves her family, that they are important to her. And you see moments of this throughout the show as she grows both as a character and closer to this new family. And it's been quite clear that she has grown close to them. But when what happens at the end of the season, so this isn't quite a spoiler because you see it at the beginning of the first episode where the high priest uses a magic like circlet on her to dive into her memories. So the show comes full circle from the very first scene in the first season, and mine is reminded of how much her family means to her. And so I thought that that was a nice way to end the season, especially because, at least in terms of the novels, it's ending somewhat in the middle of things. So they created this, I don't want to say original, but they used the looking into mine's memories bit to wrap up with a clear demonstration of just how much mine has grown as a person and as a character, to where while books may still be her focus, she's actually learned to reflect on and care about more than just that. Over the course of the series, she gets hounded by Benno and the High Priest to think about things, think through, to use her head, to consider more than books. And she does, and not necessarily always in the way that they want her to or expect her to, but it's quite heartwarming to see Mine embrace her new family. And so the series is really built on, especially within the first season, Mine and Lutz, their kind of early adventures into making paper or books and paper, establishing them together and then pushing them onto their paths. And then the second half introduces what will be the springboard for the future of the series, which is the High Priest and the church, essentially. So all in all, I think the anime did a really great job. They definitely kind of rush skipped and hopped over some important plot developments and like story beats from the novels, but I think they really got to the essence of what made these first five volumes so compelling, which was Mine and Lutz, and then Mine growing as a character, her love for her family, the relationship she develops with the people around her like Benno and the High Priest, her retainers or servants or whatever you want to call them. They use different terms in the subtitles as they do in the novels, so whichever one. Despite being an isekai series, it always felt like a very unusual one, and its focus on commerce, merchants, industry, like creating books and various products surrounding creating books, all the discussions of politics and religion, history, learning trades, all of that stuff to me is fascinating, really, really interesting. The world building is slow and methodical. You're not going to learn everything about this world from day one. There's no god to give her some info dump like so many other isekai protagonists. She's thrown into this world to a poor family as a sickly girl, and she's got to deal with it. And so we learn at her pace as well. And so as she grows and learns more about the world, so do we. It feels very organic. There are no forced info dumps or big long-winded narration that just give us the answers to anything. The world she ended up in is serious. There are real consequences to things. And the show does a really good job of transitioning between the lighter, more fun moments of like Mine being obsessed over books or developing paper and making books, things like that, to some of the more serious bits when, for example, the nobles get involved, or, you know, the church gets involved, or the conflict between Lutz and his parents with regards to his job as a merchant and wanting to travel outside the city. They handle both really well. The anime adaptation did a really good job of building up to and resolving both sides of those things. It never felt like tonal whiplash, or that the lighter fluffy side compared to the more serious side, like, it never felt like either was unnecessary or either overshadowed the other necessarily. So yeah, that's the first two seasons of Ascendance of a Bookworm. Like I said, season three was announced. I don't think we have any specific dates or anything like that, but it'll be coming eventually. Something to really look forward to. In the meantime, like I said, the anime stopped at the end of volume 5 or so. So if you like the series and don't want to wait, definitely jump into the light novel. And I would, as always, recommend you start from the beginning, but just know that the first 5 are what the anime covered. So I actually went on quite a bit about Bookworm, and so this episode might go, I don't know, a little long. But next we have my thoughts on the first season of My Next Life as a Villainess, or Elsie de Doom, otherwise known as Bakarina. The original light novel was written by Satoru Yamaguchi. The anime was animated by Silverlink. There are 12 episodes, and they announced a season 2. So on both counts, we're getting more, and I could not be happier that these two series did well and were popular enough with the anime fans that they're doing well and they want more. I love the original light novels, and it's amazing to see the anime series be done with such care and attention to detail that it's clear that as a adaptation that it continues to stand on its own legs and that people liked them. I've seen so many cases where an anime is slapdash and just really not that great. And then I read the novel, I'm like, wow, this is so much better. Or an anime is so poorly done that it turns me off from wanting to even read the original novels because it was just so tedious or boring or generic. That is not the case with either of these series. So in contrast to Bookworm, Bakarina's first season actually included a number of anime original episodes. So I actually didn't mention this at all for Bookworm because it wasn't relevant, but in Bookworm, they really didn't have to add any content, unless I'm forgetting something, but to my memory, everything came from the novels. Whereas with the first season of Bakarina, I keep saying first season, the Bakarina, the I guess it is just the first season. Whatever, there's not a second season yet, but you all know what I mean. There were two completely anime original episodes where the entire episode was original to the anime, so not from the novel's content. It was kind of clear from moment one that the anime was going to cover the first two volumes of the light novel. That is where the plot of the game, Fortune Lovers, which is the in-game otome game that the world that our main character Katarina is reincarnated into, and so this season covers the entirety of that game's plot. And in turn, that means it covers the first two volumes of the light novel. However, interestingly enough, they also brought in a slew of short stories or side stories that take place in volume 5 of the novels. For reference, volume 5 is a collection of short stories, and so they pulled several of those to use in the, I guess, original timeline they were in, or as flashbacks and stuff like that. So that was actually pretty interesting. They used that to fill up some time. I'm not necessarily sure that it was necessary to write two completely original plots for the series. If you're wondering, it's episodes 7 and 8. And I'm really not sure that that was entirely necessary. Like, they ended up condensing a number of other plot points or various parts of the arc, and then they had entire episodes of original content, but I'll digress on that. Regardless, the actual original episodes were enjoyable. They obviously didn't and couldn't advance the plot in any real way, but that may be the kind of Only downside to doing that is that they spent a good portion of the middle half of the show, middle of the show, kind of not advancing the story. All in all, I don't really think that it came out to a negative or anything like that. I enjoyed the original episodes, and I thought that the series both started and ended very strongly, and throughout was pretty hilarious. I definitely think you have to enjoy the central gimmick that everyone will fall in love with Katarina, and I enjoy that, and I continue to enjoy that in the novels. No surprise that seeing it on screen so lovingly adapted, I continue to enjoy it there. I felt like the anime did a good job introducing all of the characters, giving them enough screen time individually, for the most part, to make their case as a member of Katarina's harem, and to show off their chemistry with her, or in some cases, somewhat lack thereof. But in most cases, we got to see several of these characters grow, and grow in ways that are amusing, we'll say the least, in their love of Katarina. For reference, I sail on the Maria ship, and I think they overall, in general, have the best chemistry together. However, also big on Sophia, but she's a close second. One of the strongest aspects of this series was the comedy and the comedic timing. They absolutely nailed Katarina as a character. You couldn't ask for a better adaptation for her and her shenanigans and the harem building powers, as well as the improvements they made on her internal committee meetings, for example. Those obviously exist in the original novel series, but I definitely felt like I got a bigger kick out of them, seeing them adapted, listening to the voice actress do like 6 different voices for each of the characters, and seeing them be just absolutely idiotic on screen. A lot of Katarina's gags, or just nonsense that she gets into, is really funny or funnier on screen. Reading about it was cool, but for example, in one of the early episodes, seeing her break down Keith's door with an axe and bust in, and she's blocking the light as it shines in from, you know, the hole in the door that she just made, kind of Shining style, but not creepy, was just hilarious. On screen, it was even better than just reading about her being absolutely ridiculous doing that. The animation team clearly put a lot of effort into animating Katarina, her facial expressions, her reactions to things. There are innumerable different expressions and reactions that she makes throughout this series, and there are some really genuinely funny ones, or like very screen capable ones, that I'm sure if anyone watched the show probably has a number of reaction faces that they got from this for her. Which, that's actually something I forgot to mention for Bookworm. In the exact same vein, they gave mine an absolute ton of awesome faces, reactions, and the same kind of thing. In both cases, the people working on this clearly knew that their main characters would react in ridiculous fashion to things in the series that happen, and no amount of, you know, mine puffs out her cheeks, or Katarina is dazed and confused about something in text form could ever compete with, you know, the visual gag of it. And so that's something I think both of these shows excelled at, is their portrayal and even just the animation of their main characters. They were always very expressive. You can be expressive in written work, you know, you can say the character is expressive, but the anime takes that to the next level. So Bakarina's first season, I thought, was overall really strong, hilarious. They covered enough that you could theoretically watch the first season and call it quits and say like, cool, I enjoyed that, now it's done. Because, I mean, for example, the author originally only intended for the first two volumes to be the entirety of the series, and then decided to continue on from there due to response and popularity and things like that. And I think it's worth it. Like, I'm really glad the series continues from there. And, you know, since the anime is getting a sequel season, we'll get to see that animated as well. But for anyone wondering whether to jump in now or not, or who doesn't like to jump into a series that doesn't have a complete story or that's ongoing, you could watch the first season of this show and it will satisfy you. It will feel like start to finish it is a complete story, in essence. Most of the characters in Bakarina quite obviously come off as some trope or another, and that is, you know, obviously because of the nature of the setting for this story, is that they are all actually characters from an otome game. So they are tropes and archetypal characters. However, Bakarina uses her intense denseness, or otherwise known as her like genuine ability to care about people, to help them overcome their hang-ups and issues. And in turn, they all fall in love with her. So at least from the perspective of like character growth, the characters do change from their initial introductions to, it's basically pre and post Katarina, if that makes sense. Katarina, on the other hand, is quite static, especially in the anime season, or the first two volumes of the novels. She starts to develop some change and things shift a little after that, actually. And I won't get too deep into that, or I won't get into that at all, but the point being, if you're looking for growth from Katarina herself, you are not going to get it in this season. You might start to see it in the second season, but I don't think the first season is worse off for that in any way, and I don't think the story is worse off for that in any way. The central gimmick with Katarina, or her as a leading main character, are so strong that she doesn't need to like change or grow, at least within this first bit. Whereas with like Bookworm, mine definitely needed to grow as a character. In the beginning, she's quite difficult to read and follow due to her obsession with books and her absolute disregard for kind of everyone and everything else. And so her growth is central to the story of the first two seasons. Whereas with Bakarina, the growth is mainly of her harem and the people around her. So wrapping up kind of the Bakarina impression is that I felt like the show stood on its own. You don't need to have read the novels whatsoever to have enjoyed this season. And the same is true of Bookworm. And I think that's why the anime seasons were so well received overall, is because they don't come off as just simple advertisement for the novels. They don't come off as something made haphazardly. A lot of care was put into them. The people who worked on them clearly enjoyed and understood what made the original novels good, and they brought that to the screen for a whole new audience. These are shows that I would easily recommend standalone. And then from there, once you've been hooked, I'd get you to try and read the novels and say like, hey, why not give those a shot too? But I think for people who aren't necessarily as into reading as I am, you could definitely be content with continuing to follow the anime adaptations. They're very well done. All in all, neither series had, you know, significant production issues, I don't think. There was some wonky animation or pacing in various parts, but that's kind of to be expected for a weekly TV series, but nothing that truly distracted from either show in any tangible way. From start to finish, I thought they were both really good adaptations, and I'm really glad they'll be getting continuations. I think both series are somewhat unique in the way that they make use of the isekai genre, and so it's nice to see these types of stories doing so well. Well, I've rambled on enough about both series, and I think you get the idea They're good. They're worth watching. If you haven't seen either of these series, definitely go check them out. Go watch them. And then definitely go read the novels. Or read the novels first and then go watch them. If you're likely to be disappointed that stuff is cut out or missed, watch first, then read. It feels like you will have learned and be exploring all this new extra stuff rather than that the anime versions left out stuff. So anyway, that's going to wrap me up for this episode. Thanks for listening. You can follow updates on my Twitter. I am DocPay. If you like DocuPied, please leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Let me know what you think. I'll catch you next time.